music, news, information. Weekday mornings from 11.
This is Northside Today.
And on the line now, I have Fintan Lawler from Lawler Partners Solicitors. Hello, good morning, Fintan. How are you?
Good morning, Noel. How's the form? Are you well?
Not too bad, I am, yes, yes. And you yourself?
Yeah, I'm keeping the best, thanks.
Keeping the best, yeah. Okay, I just kind of, some of the random questions that I got in from some of our listeners. Now, the first one, I want to go into a little more maybe next week about the wills, but because it says here that, well, first of all, I'll ask you, can I make a will myself or do I have to have a solicitor?
The short answer, Noel, is anybody can make a will.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difficulty in making a will. I suppose the challenge will arise if the will isn't a valid will. And by that I mean that there are certain criteria that you have to adhere to and rules and regulations in relation to making a valid will. So by way of example, you have to have two witnesses, but the witnesses only need to witness the executor's signature. They don't have to witness the contents of the will. So mm-hmm. in that circumstance, if somebody got that part wrong, it might make a difficulty for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a rule to say that a beneficiary can't witness a will, because there might be a suggestion of undue influence being exerted if somebody is benefiting from a will, mm-hmm. and it also happens that they witness the will. So in that circumstance, you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
But they can make a will. I do think that Easton's do some form of wills where people can get a precedent will. So maybe if people wanted to look at that, the wills from solicitors are normally fairly cheap, Noel. They're about €125 per person plus that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people will be well advised to make a will and attend the solicitor and go through the process. The other thing I'd say to you, Noel, is that while somebody might make a will, they might not take account of the tax that the testator, that's the person making the will, might have to pay on the estate. So at the moment, the child can inherit €280,000 from a parent without paying tax. After that, they have to pay 33% tax.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a brother or a sister or a nephew or a niece, the threshold is somewhere around 30,186, and after that they have to pay tax.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in that circumstance that you might be better to go to a solicitor to get some tax advice as to what's the most tax efficient way to divide up your estate without getting caught for a big tax bill. So instead of, say, leaving it all to your daughter and her getting clocked with a massive tax bill, you might leave 50% to your daughter and 50% to her children, that'll be your grandchildren, in equal shares.
Mm-hmm.
If you structure it that way, you might avoid paying 33% tax, and essentially the same family will be getting the same bequest.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of tricky parts to it, but the short answer is yes, a person can make a will themselves. They don't have to go to a solicitor.
Okay, and a lot of people I hear talking, I mean, when I put it out there, sort of a bit of mumbling and a bit of conversation, a lot of people say, well, yeah, but you go to a solicitor and they want to know everything and I don't want anyone to know what I have. This sort of attitude is, you know, it seems to be putting people off, but as you said yourself, you don't. You just have to make the will, that's it.
You do know, but I normally encourage people to write down a list of their assets and liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I'm nosy, and I don't really mind how much money they have in their account. And sometimes I'll say to people, I don't want to know how much you have in your account. I just want to know where the account is.
Yes, yeah.
Because I find, no, what happens is that somebody comes in and they make a will, and they just make a bog standard will, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And they pass away 6 or 7 years later, and the son or daughter contacts me and says, I understand that you have my dad's will. He passed away there recently. Can I come in? And they come in and they get a will and say, well, that's the will, but I mean, where's his bank accounts or his post office account or life policy or, you know, shares, or do you not have any of that information?
Or which mattress is it under or something like that?
Exactly, but where is it? Is it behind the piano? Is it in the attic? You know, so that's why I normally get people to set out, and it's more as a roadmap to the executor when the person passes away, that I can say to that person, I'm not sure, but I know that in 2017 this was the list that was given to me that I put with the will, and there's a bank account there in Swords, and there's a post office account there in Coolock, and there's prize bonds there, and there's Vodafone shares, and I note that he had an interest in a boat down in, you know, in Tipperary. And they said, oh, right, I didn't realise he still had that boat. And I said, well, maybe he does or maybe he doesn't, but that's what he had in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good starting point for people to begin to look. And you might write to AIB Bank and say, no, that account was closed in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, well, if you can't disclose, you can't disclose.
Yes, sir.
But the danger is that if the beneficiaries or the executors aren't aware as to where to start, I'd be concerned that they'll miss an account.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody might have three or four accounts operating, and they might be operating really of three accounts, and there might be a fourth account there that's effectively dormant. And they say, well, I won't worry about that account because I don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
And then sure enough, they get a gift or an inheritance or a redundancy or a little bit of a windfall, and they say, well, I'll put it into that account as a savings account because I never use it.
Mm-hmm.
And they pop it into that same account, having forgotten already that they've disregarded it. And then it's possible that somebody won't be aware that that account is there.
Yes, yeah. Oh, it's easy to understand that because, I mean, people don't really talk about that. Families as such, you don't say, well, I have this much in this bank and I have shares in that and I have shares in this. You don't really talk about that unless they're advising. So it is a good idea to get everything down, as you say, and stipulate whatever it could be. Because, I mean, only recently it was a terrible case of a woman who had it hidden in the wardrobe, but... unfortunately, living on her own, it was eaten by the rats, and you don't want to be gone.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was...
by the rats?
Yeah, 100 grand, yeah.
No. Oh.
So how about that, well, then?
I think I'd have to advise them to go to Harvey Norman or somewhere and get one of those metal boxes with a key. If you're going to put it in the water, make sure the rats don't eat 100,000
euros. Listen, I have more to ask you on tax, but I'm going to put it off to another time because the recent changes, we got some calls in. A lot of people didn't know, and there was a big article, I believe, in The Independent on Sunday about some people are all... looking into it, the recent changes that were changed, I believe, on Christmas Day to do with inheritance tax and gift tax and all like that. So I'll leave that
to you. We'll talk about it the next time because there are changes there in relation to dwelling house relief and if somebody was living with a parent and they didn't have their own property and bits and pieces like that. So we'll slot that into to our next occasion, maybe.
Okay, that'd be great, Fintan. Okay, the next one is about neighbours. My neighbour's hedge is hanging right over the wall into my garden. Can I cut it back?
Yeah, this is one we've met before, Noel, I think, and the short answer is yes. If branches and leaves and trees and what have you are hanging over into your garden, you can cut them back. The difficulty is that they are actually in the ownership of your neighbour,
mm-hmm.
so you should return the clippings and the cuttings into your neighbour's garden because they belong to them.
Okay.
So I don't know, will the neighbour be grumpy if you're cutting back the tree and then chucking it over the hedge or the fence back into their garden? But the theory is that they actually own the clippings, but that you are entitled. If it's an overhang onto your property, you're entitled to cut it back. As I always say, Noel, as you know, with neighbour disputes, the best thing is to have some form of agreement. It can be difficult where there's a falling out, but you don't want to have a situation where there's bad animosity between neighbours and a bad feeling. So I think that they should knock in and say, listen, is there any chance or would you mind if we cut that tree back maybe over the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks before we get into the later spring and the early summer?
Mm-hmm.
And we're hoping to do it on Saturday the 28th of February, mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And I think do it by interaction and conversation rather than just going out on Saturday morning and getting the trimmer out and hacking away at the tree. I think it's easier just to have that conversation. Because they might find that they say, well, actually, we're cutting down the tree ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and that saves you the job and saves you the grief. Or they might turn around and say, well, that's okay, we have no interest in the clippings, so you can do whatever you want with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just easier to engage with the neighbour than doing a solo run on it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, Fintan, that you would obviously have, well, you wouldn't have to, but it'd be a better idea to say, listen, I'm going to cut these, do you mind, rather than just go out and see it, because obviously you'd been living with them next door to them for a while. So it's sort of cuts. I just had visions. I was smiling because I had visions of someone's washing just half of a dress coming over the wall off the line, cutting the dress.
Yeah.
That's when the fun would begin, though. So it's always good to ask. Always communicate with your neighbours if you have any problems. It's always the best way out, and it saves a hassle later on.
Yeah, I think it's always much better.
Okay, now to do with family now, when people separate, is there any difference nowadays in people's rights between married couples and couples who live together?
Yeah, well, the Cohabiting Act came in there probably about 2 or 3 years ago now, which effectively gives cohabiting couples similar rights to what married couples had previously. And you might remember back in the day, Noel, that when you got married, that very often the lady or the spouse, the female in the relationship, would give up work. And in that circumstance, it tended to be a situation whereby the husband was on the title and the husband was a breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
But then if the husband went and left the marriage, say, a number of years later, very often that the wife would find herself exposed because she wasn't on the title document, she wasn't on the property, and she didn't have earning capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all changed over the years. And more recently now, it's very much a case that they will try and provide for equal share, if at all possible. So for cohabiting couples, there are certain rules and regulations there in relation to that. It depends on how long you're together and what the contribution was and aspects like that. But they're definitely being brought more in line with the married couple than we have been heretofore.
Mm-hmm. I just want to go back, just as you mentioned there, I mean, that was the situation. I don't know how far we'd have to go back, but I imagine only maybe 30 or 40 years when the man's name was just on the deeds. So if we were to go back even 50 years, and just to go back to wills again, if a woman wasn't on the deeds of the house, they got married and they're married 50, 60 years and the husband died. What's the situation with the wife then, apart from the question I just asked, but getting just on, back on the will again?
Yeah, sorry, give me the question again, Noel.
If a husband hasn't made a will,
yes,
and they're been married for 60 years, her name is not on the deeds, and then the husband died before kids, has the wife automatic rights to the house?
She does, yes. She has an automatic legal right share,
okay,
in her husband's estate. And that depends then, that's broken down as a third or two thirds or a half, depending on whether there's children in the relationship or, mm-hmm, or no children in the relationship. But she's an automatic legal right share. And this is important, Noel, in respect of couples who have broken up but have never formalised their separation or their divorce. As you know, separation and divorce are very topical nowadays, and mm-hmm, it's quite commonplace, as you know. But I have experienced what has happened, say, before, say, maybe going late 70s, early 80s, where a couple got married and they were together for a few years and they separated and they went their separate ways. Now, at that stage, judicial separation and legal separation wasn't as commonplace. Divorce, as you know, wasn't in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So very often people got separated and might not have done anything about formalising that arrangement. So there's no agreement in place, or there's no judicial separation, or there's no legal separation. But they are absolutely separated and have been for donkey's years.
Yeah.
And I have come across a situation, something similar to that, that if either of those parties die, their spouse, who is their spouse from 30 years ago, has a legal right share in relation to a portion of their estate. Because what happens in the legal separation or judicial separation or divorce is that both parties will sign a waiver in relation to their entitlement to claim their share of an inheritance in, mm-hmm, the other's estate. So you have Joe and Mary, they're getting separated. Each will acknowledge that they don't have a claim on the other's estate going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody got separated a number of years ago, and I'm talking kind of 20 years ago, and never formalised that arrangement, well then, if either party dies, the other party actually can make an application to claim their legal right share.
Okay.
Because they haven't been disinherited, they haven't waived their claim in relation to it, and there's no formal deed of separation. So, for all intents and purposes, they're still regarded as husband and wife.
Okay, so just to clarify that even if 15 years ago a couple just said, look, the marriage is not working out, I'm going over to England or wherever, down the country, I want to make a new life for myself. The other one says, well, that suits me. They go apart. They may find different partners or whatever, but whoever was left in the house, mostly it's the wife, if anything happens, or the husband, even though they've been separated, he didn't do anything formal, he's entitled to a share in the house. Is that correct? Am I picking that up right?
That's exactly it, but I wouldn't, let's just say they moved off from the house, by way of example, and let's just say they started a new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that they bought a new house with a new partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings it back to our cohabiting parents and our Cohabitation Act of 2010, which you mentioned.
Yeah.
And let's just say that something happens, one of the parents, and so I'm going to go with a female for this example, and we're going to call her Anne, and Anne separated from her husband, and that's fine, and or the husband left and went to the UK, as you say. And then 5 years later, Anne met a new person and she got involved in a new relationship, and that's fine. And then Anne and that new partner had a relationship, and they possibly bought a property, and they had a few shares and they had a few investments, and lo and behold, something happens to Anne.
Mm-hmm.
there's nothing stopping her husband coming back from the UK going, hang on, that lady is my wife and I'm entitled to a legal share, my legal right share as her spouse in her estate.
Okay. Well, that clarifies that. Okay, and the last one, because I know you're very, very busy, and there's a good few questions that came in, so I'll hold them over on the next time, especially that one about the inheritance tax and the gift tax. But the last one is there a time limit for medical negligence claims?
That's a great question, Noel. That's a great question, because I've one of those cases at the moment, and it's an unusual one in that you have 2 years for a personal injury claim.
Mm-hmm.
You have 6 years for a professional negligence claim.
Wow.
But in respect to a medical negligence claim, an argument can be made going, when did you become aware that there was a negligence?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lady at the moment who got a scar or a growth removed from her nose, and she has, that was in probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and she suspects now that it wasn't properly done. She's beginning to look for her records and investigate the matter. If she becomes aware now that it wasn't properly done, she's outside of her 6 year time limit from when it was done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think an argument can be made that the 6 years should only run from now, because it's only now that she has become aware mm-hmm. that it wasn't done correctly.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
the short answer is you have 6 years for a professional negligence claim. But as I say, it depends on when the person becomes aware that there was a negligence. Because if you don't become aware that a negligent action has taken place until 7 years after the event, mm-hmm. I would say that your date of knowledge only arises at that time, and your 6 years should run from then.
Okay, well, I suppose the best thing to say about any of the things we've talked about is if you're in doubt about anything at all, I mean, don't believe hearsay, go straight to a solicitor. I think I'm correct in saying that most first consultations are free, so if you're not sure about anything, just go and say, ask a question, and then it can be looked into after that. That's the best advice I can give as a lay person, and I'm sure you would be the same.
I think in all cases, Noel, you have to get the expert opinion. Whether it's something wrong with your car or something wrong with your house or mm-hmm. something wrong with a legal query, you better get an expert advice. A lot of people go on to Google now for certain answers, and it's very informative and it's very good, but it might not just give you the exact answer that you're looking for. So as you say, if it's a first consultation free, or even if it's small enough money, it's money well spent to get the exact answer to the exact query that you have.
Yeah, because as you showed there, the medical negligence claims thing, that's a bit of a minefield, and to be so precise about it, it's no good. I mean, people looking up Google for medical problems and all, it's crazy, because it's so varied and diverse that you mightn't get the answers that you need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, listen, Fintan, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and I look forward to talking to you again. And as I say, we talk about that recent changes in the wills and more questions next time we're talking. Whenever you're kind enough and you're free again, and just give us the website for Lawler Partners.
Yep, the website is www.lawlerpartners.ie.
Okay, and the phone number is 872-5255 if you want any contact about everything to do with legal issues. Thank you very much, Fintan. Talk to you again.
Thanks indeed, Noel. Take care.
That's Fintan Lawler from Fintan Lawler Solicitors, and it's Fintan Lawler Solicitors. It's Lawler Partners Solicitors, rather, .ie, as I said, 872-5255.
Across Northeast Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.